Welcome. You are listening to the Learning to Believe Again podcast with your host, Brittany Bexton.
Where do you begin when you're learning to believe again?
Due to some of the content of today's episode, it may not be suitable for children.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. I have one of my really good friends on, Jennifer. Jennifer Witsit is what I know her as. She is married now, so that's not actually her last name anymore. But I'm so happy to have her on. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me, Brittany.
Yeah. Let's start. I just want you to tell everyone a little bit about yourself now, what you do, what you've got going on in your life currently. Just a little snippet of yourself.
Okay. So right now, I literally just closed today. My husband and I bought a condo. What my life looks like is I'm staying at home full time with my daughter, and doing a little bit of work on the side and just waking up every day, taking care of her, taking care of myself, showing up for commitments and spending time with our loved ones and making the most out of our lives right now.
Awesome. So this is kind of a different interview. It's a little different because we actually have some shared testimony in this story, which is kind of cool because some of Jennifer's story I walked through with her and it, you know, affected me in ways too. So her story is kind of one of my testimonies as well. So it'll be a little bit of back and forth, which is going to be different than some of the ones we've done so far, but I'm going to start way back. Jennifer and I met each other. Goodness, I don't even know what year it was now. In the mid 2000s, I guess.
Yep, maybe about 2006 or 7, I think.
Yeah, or maybe 2008. I was right around the market crash, I think, so it might have been 2008. I don't know, something like that. And we actually met because she was dating a guitar player that I had playing with me at the time, which is really funny because she and I ended up becoming really close friends and he and I never really talked again, at least not later on. But tell them, let's see, before I met Jennifer, she had already gone through some really crazy life stuff. So I guess I'll ask you first, when you were a kid growing up, did you have a background in church at all or a relationship with God?
I did. I was baptized and raised Catholic until I turned 16 and I refused to make my confirmation.
Catholicism's kind of a different type of Christian experience too than some of the other Christian churches, right? Because it's less about personal relationship. So I know part of Jennifer's story, so I'm going to fill in a little bit of a blank here. When I met Jennifer, she was already a recovered addict. I say recovered as in recovering. And at that point, she was, I mean, just amazing. She's an amazing person. You can tell that now. But she was amazing, doing so much awesome stuff. And she seriously was one of the best friends I'd ever had. But kind of starting from there, because that was how I met you, at what point did you kind of move away from going to church and doing that kind of stuff and experiment with drugs before I met you? Like, what led to that, I guess?
So actually, I think my first drug might have been boys. So it started with that, and then it progressed to drugs and alcohol. I was in sixth or seventh grade, and that was when I had my first blackout. I got drunk at school, blacked out, got suspended, and I had my first consequence. I don't know the reasons why, or if there were reasons why. It just is my story.
When you say you don't know the reasons why, you mean you don't know why you used or why it happened that way?
Yeah, there's lots of theories about why people, you know, drink and use drugs and you know, it could be different things. I just know that I liked the way that I felt when I was putting things into my body.
So 6th or 7th grade, you said, right? Was the first time you blacked out?
Yes.
So from there, you don't need to go into all the details, but I know that you went through a process that kind of took you to a dark place and then you recovered before I met you. You can give a brief overview of that or however much you want to share that period of time.
Yes, I got it. So it's for a little bit of specifics. So basically what led to my first bottom, so to say, So I had a challenging home life. I came home from college for Thanksgiving and my father and I got into an argument. I believe it was pretty bad. I don't remember the details very clearly, but I know I left and I called a man that was, a bad news bear. And I ended up experimenting with crystal meth. And from the first day I picked that up, I didn't stop until I landed in rehab about a year later. And at that point I was homeless for the first time at 19. And, you know, that's no family support. They, you know, separated themselves from me. Sure. So my family decided to go. I think my mom went into Al-Anon at that point. So they were trying to help me by not having contact with me. And at that point, you know, they agreed that the only contact they would have with me was if I agreed to go to a treatment center.
Yeah.
And then I was introduced at that point to AA.
So I'm curious, because it's funny, I've heard bits and pieces of your mom's side of the story, but what was it like for you dealing with that, knowing that you couldn't go home and that your parents weren't responsive? Was that a motivator for you, or was it harder? Or
it was, yes. I think it was definitely a motivator. Yeah.
So you said you started going to AA at that point. Is that when you got totally clean in AA?
I did for 5 years and then I relapsed. So from drugs and alcohol, I was clean, but I also struggle with food addiction, which was prominent during that 5 years.
Now those 5 years, that was during that time that you and I knew each other.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
During that time, we got to go on walks.
Yeah. So Jen and I met, I guess when we met, it had been almost 5 years already that you had been clean, right?
Close to.
Yeah. So maybe 4, because I think, well, I guess you were maybe at about 3, because I think that we were pretty close for a couple of years before you relapsed. So when I met Jen, she had been clean and sober for at least 3 years. She was actively working her program, had a job walking, well, not just walking dogs, but taking care of dogs at a kennel. And when she and I met, I was going through one of the worst breakups that I have ever experienced. So Jen and I were good friends. She was there for me through a really, really rough breakup with my ex, who was abusive emotionally. And it was really a rough time for me because I'd been in this situation where I had lost a lot of myself in it. And I'm totally an out loud processor. And Jen was like my saving grace. She worked with these dogs and we would go walking. She would take breaks pretty much every day. I think you walked me every day for a while there. But we would go walking pretty much every day and just talk through everything. And as we were talking, Jen would say, you know, I know you don't think he's an alcoholic yet, but he has a lot of the signs and symptoms of being an alcoholic. And I just want to prepare you for that just in case. So she was a rock to me in a lot of ways. And we got really close and she became one of my very best friends. And we actually met, I said this earlier, but we met because of a guitar player that played with me at the time. She had just started dating him. And that's kind of where the story gets interesting. So tell us a little bit about Greg and I guess meeting him and what that was like.
Oh, So the catalyst to meeting Greg was my food addiction turned into an eating disorder. I decided that AA wasn't working and I couldn't get into therapy. I couldn't get into treatment and I needed something. So somebody suggested a church and I was like, okay, let's go to church. So not only did I get introduced to, you know, to Jesus at that church, but I also was introduced to Greg, who was up there singing. From the moment I laid eyes on Greg, I said, I am going to marry that man. And I did, not too long after that. And he had struggled with staying sober. And I ended up ultimately relapsing with him, which began my relapse, which took me to all sorts of new levels of low in life.
Yeah. Now I will say that Jen dealt with a whole lot of relapsing from Greg before she ultimately relapsed with him.
I did. I lied to him before I even relapsed to try to trick him into I was so codependent. I wanted to do anything I could to save this marriage. And I thought, you know, this is my last shot.
Your last shot. When you say your last shot, what do you mean? What did you think was your last shot?
I thought if I used with him that maybe I wouldn't leave him. I think that's what it was, which I ended up leaving him anyways. Because we were both gonna, I knew we would either die together or it wasn't going in a good direction. It had gotten pretty bad. So yeah. I didn't want to watch him die.
No. And I can attest as being a friend to her during that time too, there were quite a few times leading up to that we didn't know if he was going to die, because anytime he used, there was a possibility. And that's a hard, hard, hard place to be.
Yeah.
Now, when that happened, if I recall correctly, the same time that Greg relapsed that last time, you went through a really big personal tragedy with your family too. Your dad passed away suddenly in a skydiving accident, right?
He did. So it was this, and this is how my relationship with God went rocky at the time. I always said if I relapsed, something horrible would happen. So right after I had relapsed with Greg, my dad died in a skydiving accident. It was pretty horrible. I remember that day I was sitting at home, I was high, and he had gone skydiving instead of visiting me for what he thought was my 5-year sobriety birthday. So I had a hard time. I felt like I caused it. I felt guilty. And I felt like God was punishing me. And at that point, I think I started using and I think I wanted to die. I think that's when my depression got worse.
Yeah. Well, that was a lot of trauma compounding. So it would be hard for anybody to deal with that, you know, and to already have things to deal with. So you said that during that time you thought God was mad at you and he was punishing you. So I know that when you and I met, obviously you were still struggling with some things, but you had a pretty good relationship with God at that point, right? So would you say that was kind of a turning point with you where you felt distanced from him again?
Yes, I decided that God didn't exist at that time. Yeah. I decided that if God was a vengeful God, then I wanted nothing to do with it. And it just didn't exist.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy? Some of the things that we can feel and think when we're in the midst of pain. So
yes,
during that time, I remember because Jennifer and I were really close and I always knew if something was going on with Greg or in that situation, because we would talk all the time. And if Jen went quiet on me, then I knew something was wrong. So I remember her going quiet and knowing that something was wrong. And I just kind of knew in my gut that she had relapsed. And honestly, that wasn't a shock, not because I thought anything of her except amazing things, but because I knew what she was dealing with at home and everything that was going on with her dad. I don't know if you remember this, Jen, because I don't know how clean you were at the time or how much of that time frame is a blur, but I think we had gone a month or two maybe without talking, and I got a phone call one afternoon from Jen, and at that point in time, you and Greg had been put in a sober living facility together. I believe you had told me that you were arrested high driving with drugs in the car, and you were both in a sober living facility, and you had apologized for not being in touch, and you said we would talk again soon. But that is where the last contact I had with Jennifer was for at least 5 years. So I'm going to let you take over from there and tell us kind of what you went through in those 5 years. Do you remember making that call to me, by the way?
I don't remember much. No, I don't remember much. I may have had already been relapsed at that point. That 5 years was the worst, most necessary experience of my life. I turned to IV drug use. I turned to prostitution. I was assaulted many times. I was raped a few times, and I wasn't allowed to come back home. And I'll never forget, there was one day, I was taking my vehicle, which I was living in, was stolen with me inside the vehicle. And I was beat up and left in Richmond, and I wasn't allowed back home. And I tried to hitchhike home, and then I was raped. And then this was just the start of me leaving the county to be homeless in another county. And it just went on like that for a while. And my life was miserable. I remember, I'd wake up in the morning, and first thing I think was, okay, I got to figure out a way to eat, a way to drink, a way to sleep. And over again, I would get into these situations that were just horrifying. But eventually I ended up back in the same place. I ended up in detox and then rehab, some years mm-hmm. later. I was going to go to prison for 5 years, I think. And I did 7 months in treatment instead of jail or prison. And I met my husband there, who I'm still with now. And we have a darling little toddler.
She is the cutest. She is so, well, I haven't met her yet. I can't believe I haven't met her yet. I feel like that's a crime. I remember the last time I actually got to see Jen in person, she was pregnant with Paisley, but I haven't gotten to meet her yet in person, but she is absolutely beautiful and adorable. Now you said
you're about to meet her right now.
Hi, Paisley.
Hi.
You want to go to the McStuffins?
Yes.
Don't jump on the couch. Okay.
So you said during that time, I think I heard, well, you had cut out for a second, something about you had just lost your husband. So did you leave Greg during that time period when you were on the streets?
Yes, I left him after that sober living house. I relapsed in that house, and I went to treatment, and I did my best not to have contact with him after that. I tried distracting myself with other things and people, and because I thought we needed to try to get better on our own.
Yeah.
So
that was probably wise. Yeah. I know it took time for you to get better, but yeah. In the midst of chaos, I do think that was a wise decision. Sometimes.
Yeah. I have my regrets.
Sometimes I think certain decisions aren't even necessarily ours in a moment. It's like God does slip into those moments sometimes and helps us make decisions that maybe we couldn't make on our own. So you said in the detox center, is that where you said you met your husband?
I met him in a treatment facility after the detox that I was kicked out of. But yeah, I think I was like month five and I met
him. In the treatment center when you met him?
Yeah.
I just want to ask you, what role has God played in you getting clean again and getting your life back? How did you, I guess, regain a relationship with God and a connection with him?
It's hard to answer that. I think the number one reason would probably be a series of coincidences that happened over the past 6 years through me experimenting with prayer. I didn't believe in God necessarily, but I started praying anyways. And the more I did that and the more these coincidences started happening, it became harder to deny.
Yeah.
And I'm still amazed when it happens. It still happens. And I'm like, okay.
I call those God winks. There's actually a book called God Winks that came out and this little like really cheesy, like super cheesy TV show about it. But I think it's such a great name, God Winks, you know, like things that you know that only God would know, right? That you've prayed about or thought about or spoken to him about somehow. So Paisley is not a coincidence, but was she an answered prayer for you?
Oh, yeah. In fact, Kirk was told he couldn't have kids. And I prayed, he didn't want kids, but I wanted her more than anything in this world. Yeah. Then she came along and how could you not love her?
Yeah, she's amazing. So. I think it's awesome. Not only was she an answered prayer for you, but it was a miracle at the same time because Kirk wasn't supposed to be able to have kids.
Hmm. And it was a miracle she's okay. She came early and her cord wrapped around her neck and they were able to do an emergency cesarean right in time.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yep. My baby was protected.
She was totally protected, as were you, which is amazing. Honestly, it's really a miracle that you're okay after everything that you went through and that you're still here and you're alive and you're you. And that's a miracle I thank God for all the time. I just want to go back to when you did get clean. I don't know how long you had actually been clean when you contacted me. What I do know is that it had been 5 years since I had had any contact with Jennifer. And I kind of want to just go into what was going on for me during that time. I obviously kept living my life and doing things, but Jennifer had been one of my very best friends, and it was hard knowing that she had relapsed. And, you know, if you're in a situation like that, you feel helpless when someone you love is hurting themselves, really, or in a situation where they're not healthy and there's really nothing that you can do. But I prayed. I prayed for her all the time. And even 5 years later, I never stopped thinking about Jennifer. I never stopped praying for her. And a lot of the time that prayer for me, and I don't know if I've told you this or not, but that prayer for me turned into something different over time where it was a really private conversation that I would have with God. And it was just, God, I pray that she's okay. And I ask you to keep her safe and please, please keep her safe. Please get her sober and healthy again. And please let me know that she is okay. So that I know that she's alive and that she's okay. And there wasn't a year that passed in all of those 5 years. Again, no contact. We had no contact. I literally in those 5 years had no idea if Jennifer was even alive. I had no way to reach her, contact her. She had been on the streets for a lot of it. And I didn't know if she was alive. And I just prayed, God, let her be okay. Let her be alive and let me know that she's okay at some point. So fast forward, 5 years later, it was actually Thanksgiving. It was Thanksgiving, and I had been down south visiting friends of mine that were in Alabama. And I got in the car to come home, and I can't remember if I'd stopped at a gas station or if I was just in traffic that was so bad that it was at a dead standstill, but I opened my email. And in my email, I had an email that had come to me through my website, and it was Jennifer. And I can't remember the exact words of the email, but I remember she wrote it as if she was talking to my management. And of course, I'm the one that got the email. And it basically said something along the lines of, I don't know if Brittany remembers me, but we were friends. And her guitar player, I was married to her guitar player. So she should remember the guitar player or something. It was something like that. And if she's willing to talk to me, I would just really love to talk to her. Y'all, I basically parked the car and just started bawling. Like, not sad tears, but happy tears that were 5 years of prayers worth of tears. I can't even like talk about it honestly without getting a little bit teary-eyed now, because prodigals do come home and people do get better and come out of horrible, horrible situations, you know? I spent 5 years not knowing if she was alive. And just having that silent prayer with God, just let her be okay and let me know that she is. And that day, my prayers were answered and she was okay. And she wasn't just okay. She was doing well again. She was herself again. And she was thriving. So as soon as I got her message, I think I called her then. Like, I think I pulled over the car and called her and got a voicemail. And I just said, it's Brittany. I just got your email. Of course I remember you. I remember you better than Greg. And I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, how could she think that I would remember him more than her? But you know, I think shame does horrible things to our minds, like especially when we've gone through situations that have really messed with our identity and how we feel about ourselves. And I say that to say, like, I valued her so much as a person, and there was never a day, not one day that she was gone, that I thought anything less of her. I just wanted her to be safe and be home. So how long was it after you had gotten clean that you reached out to me? Because I don't even know that. I just know it'd been 5 years, I think, since we had talked.
I'm not sure. I think I reached... just sometime after I got out of treatment. So I don't know. Once I got an apartment and got a phone and got internet access and got a job, I think I tried to reach out to you. So, but my path to sobriety has been, you know, spotty, and my path to mental stability has been spotty. But, you know, here I am.
Yeah. Well, life's a journey. You know, I think there, you do hear stories of people that God literally delivers in a moment. I mean, I've interviewed people like that. I know people like that where God just in an instant really delivered them. But I think more often than not, it's a journey, you know, and it's a journey of us getting closer to God and finding more out about ourselves and healing. And it's a journey sometimes to get back to our true identity, like who God intended us to be and what that really means, and even understanding our value. You know, I know for me in my own healing process, it's been a journey. And I still believe that even for those of us who've had kind of crazy journeys, right, there's still moments sometimes where we do experience kind of sudden deliverance from different things, or, you know, those moments where you have like a breakdown where you cry over something that you didn't even realize was still or was a hurt. So yeah, I mean, even for those of us who have been kind of on a journey for healing, I think there are those moments where, you know, you can have sort of that sudden healing where you cry over something you didn't even realize was a pain. And in that moment, you know, God kind of delivers us from something we didn't even necessarily know we were struggling with. But it's a process. It's an unpeeling, right? And I think it's not just an unpeeling of our layers of healing, but kind of an unpeeling of discovery of God and his goodness and how he really is with us. So I just want, you've already shared a little bit about it, but I just want to highlight like how much redemption has been in your life, really, after everything you've gone through and everything you've walked through. I think you're a walking miracle, just even that mentally and health-wise mentally, that you are who you are still. You know, you are still Jennifer. You're still the friend that I knew. And not only did God protect your mind and all of that, you know, but he's given you some pretty awesome gifts and really redeemed your life in some really amazing ways. And I just think that's awesome. And I don't know if there's anything in particular you want to share about that. I know we already talked a little bit about Paisley. So
just the miracles in my life right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, as of recently, it's like everything that I've ever wanted is happening for me in my life. And everything that I thought I could never have is happening in my life. I mean, you know, I've set these goals and I found the strength, you know, between myself and between God to do everything. I just lost 60 pounds this year. We bought the condo. I moved to a new location so I could stay home. My relationships are great, but out of everything that happened, the number one blessing that I have is that I've learned how to be grateful. Whenever I think about all the horrific stuff that has happened and that happens to other people, I come back to the fact that, you know, I can sleep inside. I'm not freezing. I have food, you know, and gratitude was always explained to me as this, you know, tangible thing. And it's not, it's a feeling. And it's, you know, I could pray all I want, but I couldn't access it. But after, you know, everything I went through, you know, have all these blessings in my, you know, there's like barely a day that goes by where, you know, something gets me down or upsets me. And so even though it was horrible, I wouldn't take back any of it because it took me here. And God took me here. And, you know, working on a relationship with God in this new community is a little challenging. I'm looking for a new church. We're kind of trying some out right now. You know, I feel God and the Spirit, whatever you want to call it, in my life almost on a daily basis. I'm like waiting for the ball to drop, you know, like when is this going to stop? I'm trying to enjoy it while it's here because I know life gets hard. That's why I have support systems. So I'm going to look for one here because it won't be like this forever, but I'm so grateful that it is.
Life does get hard, but that doesn't mean the ball's going to drop. That's one that I've had to work on in my own life, you know, because when you've gone through a lot and dealt with a lot of trauma, it's easy to feel like the other shoe's going to drop or the ball's going to drop at some point. But, you know, even when we go through the hard things, God is there. And there are blessings. And you're right. Gratefulness is so huge.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, what you just said, it's like, how many of us can say we're grateful for the house we live in or not being freezing or whatever, but you've actually experienced the other side of that.
Yeah.
I like what you said earlier.
And I don't wish that on any.
Yeah. No, no.
If I could bottle up the gratitude and share it with people somehow, it would be amazing. I don't know, but I know that you can't talk.
I'm sorry, you cut out for a second. You said you can't talk people into being grateful. Is that what you said?
Yeah, you can't talk anyone into being grateful.
Yeah. No.
I've tried.
No, you can remind people of the good things in their life, but you sure can't talk anyone into gratefulness or making healthy changes. All you can do is be there, right? And be an example. And you are that. You are an example to people of what it looks like to come through that. I love, you said earlier in the interview, you said something along the lines of the most horrible thing that I had to go through to get, or something like that. It was like the most awful thing that I had to go through or the relapse. I can't remember exactly your wording, but it was something, I guess, just acknowledging that to get where you are now, you had to walk through what you did then.
If I hadn't gone through that, I'd have all these great things, but I wouldn't appreciate it. And, you know, what's the point?
Yeah. You know, there's this verse in the Bible. It talks about, I think it might have been the woman with the alabaster jar, but I'm not 100% sure if it's the same story. That story kind of has some similar things if it's not. But basically, there's a woman who had been a prostitute and living in ways that she felt awful about. And she came to Jesus and she just, you know, wept at his feet and he forgave her. And the Pharisees said, oh, see, he can't be the Son of God, because if he was, he wouldn't let these people that, you know, have done these things come near him. He would know. And Jesus looks at them and says, you know, he says a parable about someone whose debt was forgiven. But he basically ultimately says to them, the one who is forgiven much loves much and is more grateful than the one who's been forgiven little. And I do, it's like, you know, that capacity of loving and appreciating God. I do think you're right. You know, you would have had those things, but you might have not had the same capacity to be grateful for them or to even recognize the miracle that it is that you have them. You know, people that have some of those luxuries and blessings in their life tend to take them for granted, you know, but when you've potentially lost everything and then you have everything that you've wanted redeemed, that's truly, you know, truly a miracle. So if you could leave our viewers or listeners, I guess I should say, with one nugget of hope and encouragement tonight, what would it be? Like, if you could distill something into just one nugget, like that you would like everybody to be able to take with them. Wisdom, encouragement, hope, whatever you want to call it, what would it be?
So I would say, if I could say anything meaningful, it would be when you wake up in the day, acknowledge the gratitude for being alive, because we don't, that's all we have. That's all we have, is we have this life. And when you come across other people, be empathetic. And you know, we don't know what people have been through, and always, you know, treat people with kindness and love. If I can do this, then all of y'all can do whatever you want in life. Just find the goal, stick to it, and pray your ass off.
Yes. Yeah. And know, right? Know that God is with you. Even when you totally turn your back on him, he's still there. He's still there.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that was a nugget of inspiration. I mean, I know you don't think it was, but that is a nugget for everybody to carry with them. Because we should wake up and just first thing in the morning, no, you've been given a chance at another day, you know? So I'm going to leave a nugget too and just say, don't stop praying for the people that you love, and don't stop believing for them, because people do heal. Addictions do break. Relationships are restored, and prodigals do come home, even when it seems completely hopeless and there is nothing in the natural that would make you think that there is a reason to hope. God still does miracles, and things can still change, even in an instant. So don't stop praying and believing. Yep, prodigals do come home. So thank you so much, Jennifer, for doing this with me. I know it's hard to talk about some of this stuff, so I really appreciate that. And I'm still just grateful that you're in my life, and that I get to have you back after all these years. So thank you. I love you, friend.
Well, thank you too. You're a big part of my, you know, you've answered many of my prayers throughout our friendship. So I love you, and you're a light in my life, and I'm blessed to have you in it always.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, guys. I will see, well, I won't see you all, but you will hear me on the airwaves next week. Have a great one.
I can stand when I'm on my knees, that I can hold.